Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
Oh, and Andy Jacobs.
Yes, and Andy Jacobs, yes. And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We talked art, didn't we?
We did.
But football art, sporting art, L.S. Lowry, the painting which is owned at the moment by the Professional Footballers Association, is going under the hammer.
I wanted to do the whole interview as Melvin Bragg, but I resisted.
Yeah, well, when you get your hay fever, you sound like him anyway. Who else did we talk to today? Oh, we had a chat with the manager, Glenn Arvan. He fielded the youngest player in UK football history yesterday over in Northern Ireland for his team. He'll tell us more about that. And what else did we do? I look at the...
Of course. What were we going to do?
Oh, we had a chat. We had something else in the show as well, didn't we? Well, look, hang on. Look. We'll let the producer make the selection and it'll all be there. And you're here now, you might as well listen. So here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy. Yes. And you said to me, if you're looking for a bit more Champions League football tonight, the Barcelona Bayern game is high quality. And I said, no thanks, I've had my fill of Champions League this evening. I did keep an eye on the goals show and ear out for Adrian, but I'd seen quite enough, really. It's interesting, we have a little group of us, a little WhatsApp group of all of us who sit together at Spurs. And my immediate reaction after the game was, might not be a bad thing in the long run. Showed a few up tonight as we were getting away with it. Could be a bit of a reality check. And it was interesting to hear Hugo Lloris say the same thing, because I've been coming in every day after a game when we talked to Danny Kelly on a Monday and saying, yeah, we weren't very good again. We just got away with it. And in the end, that I've been saying on the show, your luck's going to run out in the end. And it did last night.
It did look like they were going to get a point. I watched the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, and they should have.
It didn't look like a thriller, but it was a great save from Lloris. And then from the corner, we saw what happened.
It was a very good heading. It was a very good goal. But they didn't really create enough. Sonny again was just an empty shirt. And I don't quite know what's
gone
on there.
Yeah, something going on there.
And it does seem very odd that you build a much deeper squad. And towards the end of the game, a few of them didn't look quite tired. And you don't use it. It's probably no coincidence that two sporting goals came from substitutes, fresh legs on the pitch and fresh minds.
Mm.
And even with a break at the weekend, the fact that some of the players looked a bit leggy was a bit of a shock. And I look at someone like Yves Bissouma, he's such a good player. I thought he'd come in, I thought he'd get game time, but he's not had a chance to get any rhythm. Obviously, he doesn't fancy Jed Spence at the moment. These guys not getting a look in. Even Doherty, who he trusted before the injury.
Is he fit?
Yeah, he's absolutely fit. Yeah, he's there on the bench. It's very odd, really, that he's not using the bench a little bit more. But I'm not going to overreact, because it's one defeat since April.
Yeah.
So, I know that the debate on Breakfast with our Spursy again. Well, they haven't lost since April.
I thought that was ridiculous.
They haven't lost since April. So let's not all get
anyone
too carried
can lose
away.
A game like that in the last 10 minutes. So I did watch I started off actually. I thought, well, I fancy both games. So I actually did a strict 5 minutes on each. So 5 minutes on the Liverpool game, 5 minutes on the Bayern. But it really
that's
caught.
Your way to destine to, just to caught, miss every goal.
It caught my attention though. It held my attention. It was the first half hour was electric. It was tremendous. But it's really odd watching Barca with Koundé, Rafinha, Alonso, and Christians. I felt a bit like Jim Bowen. Here's what you could have won.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You've got your new man in charge tonight. We're going to have a chat with Nick Schapanik, who's a big Brighton fan, author, and journalist, and he knows the way that Graham Potter likes to approach things. So we'll get his take on it. But how are you feeling about this tonight?
Well, I think it'll be. I really wish I could. had got a ticket. And you know, I told you on Monday I
couldn't work the website, could you?
Managed to get it worked out for the next two Champions League games. Yeah, I think, look, you can't expect too much. He's only had a few training sessions. The team structurally has problems. The squad has problems. It's not balanced enough. And nothing he does, you know, they're capable of playing well, though. We've seen that in games, you know. So a lot of it is desire. So much about, I mean, you saw Bayern in the first half last night. They were poor. But if Barca had been 2-0 up, you wouldn't have said anything. And yet, second half, they came out and showed desire, showed running, and, you know, put a lot into it. And, of course, it made a difference. There's so much about them. When there's not much between any of these teams, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
I did think of the Ajax player, though, Jurrien Timber. I was thinking, what do you say when you hack him down?
Yeah, that's hack him down. He's a good player.
Oh, tremendous player. Yeah, very much so. And, so it was a strange turnaround. But in the Liverpool game, I think Liverpool deserved to win, but Daley Blind, I mean, God. Golly, he should have scored that header. It was virtually an open goal. I mean, he knew he should have scored. And you could see the relief from Klopp. I mean, they needed that in a big way.
Absolutely.
But it's a shame the game's off this weekend, because I think it would have been a good time to play Liverpool in a way. So
you really? Yeah. I mean, they're back? I mean, the consensus with Danny and everybody else is they're back.
Oh, no. I think it was far too early. That game could easily have finished 2-2. Mm. I mean, it was...
They didn't create a lot, though, Ajax, did they?
No, but...
I mean, they had one shot on target and scored from it.
Yeah, that's right. It was a tremendous finish. It was a devastating finish from Kudos.
We were chatting...
Fair play to him. I don't know what you could give him.
Yeah, I don't know what you can give him. We were chatting about him yesterday to Marcel van der Kroon, because he scored a great goal against the Rangers last week as well. He looks decent. So
he does.
I think Ghana, not a massive surprise, but Ghana got a really good squad going into the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. It's going
to
be good.
And a decent group to get out of. We were looking at the group yesterday and, you know, they could come through that, definitely.
These two fixtures that we've lost now for Chelsea, and lots of other clubs have lost two fixtures. It's going to be hard to make it up before the World Cup. And so the table's going to look a bit odd going into the World Cup. Mm. Certain teams will have played certain teams, you know, good teams, but some teams won't have played a lot of their rivals. And so it's only going to unfold after the World Cup.
Two of the clubs vying for top four would have played City, us, last weekend, and Arsenal.
Yeah.
But that's been replaced with a PSV game. So you'd imagine though that won't be played until after the World Cup.
It definitely affects the whole look of the table and everything. So, but look, there's nothing to be done. What can you do? It's the way it is.
So you're not nervous tonight then, Andy? Potter era, what are you expecting?
Well, I expect eventually for it to be good. I think Chelsea have got good players, and you know, but they it's so much about mentally how they accept the coach, mentally how much they put into it. If they do that...
What's the word? Have you been hearing a few whispers about how he's been...
Only Jorginho. I mean, players always say, oh, he's great, the new manager.
They always say that, don't they?
Yeah, and they always say, I'm sorry, the old manager lost his job. Well, why didn't you put more of an effort in when he was here?
Did he? I mean, apparently it's been a lot of laughter at the training ground.
It's always good, isn't it? You know,
a lot of laughter in the dressing room after training. Well, maybe he's gone in there and just done 10 minutes.
Let's hope there's a lot of laughter tonight.
Hello, mate. What's your name? N'Golo. What do you do, mate? Well, I'm a footballer. What about you, mate? Yeah, Georgie. What do you do? I'm a footballer. Yeah, not a rich scene, this, is it, really?
I think
we may struggle with this.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Now, as you were hearing, the national anthem will be sung and a minute's silence observed at all the Premier League games this weekend. Last night in the Championship, EFL National League, football fans had their chance to pay their respects to Her Majesty the Queen at the Preston North End Burnley game. On the completion of the minute's silence, our fine tenor Russell Watson struck up God Save the King, and we'll play that for you now.
God save our gracious King, long live our noble King, God save the King. Send him victorious, happy and glorious, long
moment. Good afternoon, Russell.
Good afternoon. Wow.
Yeah. What was
some night last night?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you were never going to be left to sing it alone, but they got behind you, the crowd, didn't they?
Oh, it was amazing. And the 1 minute silence as well, brilliantly observed. And then straight into God Save the King. Yeah, I mean, I don't generally get nervous. I've done so many huge sporting events over the years, from the Champions League final at the New Camp Stadium to the Commonwealth Games. But I was feeling it a little bit last night. I was feeling it a little bit. But not least of all because I've been singing God Save the Queen
for such a
long time. Mm. And even in rehearsal, I did it in rehearsal, and you know, it was God Save Our Gracious King, Long Live Our Noble King, God Save the King. And then I send her victorious.
Oh, no.
it's so easily done. But thankfully, the focus was there, and I got it right. It would have been quite embarrassing.
I suppose it's very different from singing on a stage, isn't it? Because people are there to hear you sing. But when you're in that situation, and it's, you know, people will join in, and it's obviously a completely different feeling, I would guess.
It's a totally different feeling altogether singing in a stadium, because I mean, when I was doing the rehearsal in the afternoon, the thing is, when there's nobody in, it's even more echoey, it's even more resonant, the stadium. I was singing in the afternoon, and it's weird because I'm singing, I didn't have any monitors or anything, I just had the microphone. Mm. And as I'm singing, I'm literally hearing my voice about a second and a half later. Oh. So it's the strangest feeling, because you're getting the bounce back from the speakers, and it takes about a second or so to get back to your ears. But it's a weird feeling, because you feel like you're sort of, I don't know, behind it.
I saw you on with Steph McGavin, actually. My wife had taped it and we were watching it. And you were talking about the Royal Variety Show and meeting Her Majesty. Yeah. Some lovely photos of you there as well. Great memories for you.
Yeah, magical memories. And that would have been back in 2001. So that was my first ever performance and meeting with her. And obviously since then, I've performed in front of her. Goodness me. I mean, it's well into double figures. For various different things, from, you know, the Royal Variety Show to the Remembrance Festival, just so many different occasions where I've had the pleasure of singing. The 60th anniversary as well, where I did three concerts, basically in the rear end of Buckingham Palace. Mm-hmm. And there's always that. It doesn't matter how many times you sing for the Queen, there's always that sense of trepidation. This is the one person I really don't want to mess it up in front of.
And have you met the King as well?
Yeah, I've met the King on quite a few occasions, because I'm an ambassador. I'm not sure whether they're going to call it the King's Trust now, but I've been an ambassador for a very long time for the Prince's Trust. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, I've met him on a quite a few occasions. He's a gentleman.
You are a big Manchester United fan, and they're in action again tomorrow. How are you feeling about life? Are you feeling a bit more optimistic than you did a few weeks ago?
A little bit more optimistic. It's funny, isn't it? Because I've kind of, along the way, I've inherited another two clubs that I follow avidly as well now, Preston being one, because, I mean, I started following Preston back in 99 when I sang there for the first time. It was the season I think they got promoted. So Preston are one of my teams, and also my wife is from up Stoke, and the whole family, it's the biggest family I've ever known in my life. It's about 2,000 of them, and they're all massive Stoke fans. They go every week, so I've kind of inherited Stoke City as well. But yeah, my first team, obviously, Manchester United. And yeah, I mean, it's starting to look better. I think the one thing that he's doing there, that Ten Hag's doing, is he's actually not taking any messing. I think he's the first manager that's actually gone into the club and said, right, if you mess around, I don't care whether you're Ronaldo, I don't care whether you're Pogba, whoever you are, you're out of the club or you're on the bench. And he's the first person that had the bottle to drop Maguire onto the bench as well, which I thought was a massive statement, because Maguire hadn't really been playing the best football, and he was going out every week. The defence all of a sudden looks like it's firmed up, and we're just all round looking, I don't know, a little bit more sparky. I think Martinez has brought a bit of spark to the club as well, and it's all of a sudden looking a little bit better. It's long overdue.
Sure, yeah.
I think you're right about Ten Hag. I was at the Brentford game, which was such a disaster and looked bad. And the way he got them in the next day and made them run that specific amount that they had been outrun by
Brentford. 13K. He got criticised for it, but I thought it was quite a cute thing to do as well.
Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter what you do. In this world now, with social media and the intervention of social media and everything, everybody's got a voice. So it doesn't matter whether you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you're going to get criticised. Yeah. He's going to get criticised for everything he does. Even if we win every game to the end of the season, there's still going to be people criticising. Because there's always, for every positive, there's always a negative in this world. But the one thing that I think that he's done that is absolutely fantastic is he's slowly, slowly getting the respect of the players and he's getting them on side. And no one's done that since Ferguson. Even Jose Mourinho, who I thought was a fantastic manager, came into Old Trafford and really struggled to get those players on his side. And Ten Hag's come in and you can tell he's kind of like... He's got that look, the silent assassin look about him. Mm-hmm. He just seems very calm, but you can tell when he's back in that dressing room, I bet there's zero calmness about him.
And finally, Russell, you're on tour from November the 13th with Ali Jones. You're around the country. And you're going to be on the 29th of November. That's the night England play Wales in the World Cup. And you two will be on stage together at the Adelphi in London.
That's a good point.
So that'll be interesting.
As soon as I found out that I didn't know, for some reason, I was one of the only people on the planet that didn't know the World Cup was being up until about, you know, a couple of months ago. Mm. I was like, why are they doing it during that period? I'm on tour. I'm going to miss all the games. So we're going to be, it's basically mine and Alid's. We're releasing a Christmas album this year and doing a tour together. But yeah, I'm sure wherever we go, we'll have our iPads and we'll be, you know, watching sneakily backstage while we're on stage singing "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." Come on, England!
Yes, well, that's, of course, England beat Wales or vice versa. One of you is going to be a bit downcast in the second half of the show.
I'm a big advocate for the home nation, so I'm going to be rooting for, you know, all the nations. It's a great thing that, you know, there's us, Wales, of Scotland made it as well.
Sadly not. No,
it's just that's sort that, point there.
Yes, that's it. Rubbing it in. Yeah, when you go to the Glasgow Royal Concert, so don't say good luck in the World Cup.
I'd have loved to have seen Scotland there because, again, you know, Watson, we've got a lot of Scottish heritage as well, so it'd have been fantastic to see them there as well. But it's great to see Wales there. I mean, it really is. And I think it's going to be it'd be an interesting. I'm excited about it.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, look, good luck with the tour, Russell. Well done last night. Good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's such a buzz. And I just want to say before I do go, after I'd done the performance, I was walking. I had to walk all around the pitch side and I got the most incredible ovation. I actually had tears in my eyes because as I was walking around, people were standing up applauding me, the whole stadium. And it was just so super, super highly emotional. It was just a wonderful night last night. It really was.
Fantastic.
Both sets of supporters.
Well
amazing.
Done, the Preston and Burnley fans. Cheers, Russell. All the
Cheers,
best,
Russell.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
That's Russell Watson there. Thanks to him.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
British football history made yesterday in Northern Ireland in the League Cup when 13-year-old Christopher Atherton turned out for Glenarvan. 13 years and 329 days. Came on as a sub and made quite the impact. Joining us now is the Glenarvan manager, Gary Hamilton. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
It's had an awful lot of focus, this story today. You could kind of expect it because it is quite a story. I mean, you obviously felt he was ready. What made you give him the chance last night?
Yeah, he's a talented young kid. You know, he's a special talent that we've had at the academy from his 4 years of age, 5 years of age, and he also happens to play in the same team as my son. So he's somebody that I've actually seen probably more regularly than a lot of them. So, but he's always been talented, and you know, from a young age, he's attracted interest from clubs obviously cross channel and that. And you know, I've just watched him develop year in year out, and he just keeps getting better and better. But he's got a great attitude as well, and he's got a great desire to work and work ethic off the pitch as well on his own, and it all leads him to be the player he is.
I mean, physically, he must be strong, because I think at any level of football, putting a 13-year-old with men, he's going to need to be strong.
Yeah, well, listen, it's probably more to do with his ability. He finds space very well, and he probably keeps himself out of physical battles quite well on the pitch as well, even at his own age group, you know, because even though he's only 13, he plays against 15 and 16-year-old kids regularly, who some of them are 6 foot plus as well and built like men, and you know, but he always manages with his ability and his awareness to find pockets and to find gaps, and he moves the ball quickly as well. It doesn't allow people to get kicking at him much, but you know, I do watch him quite regularly at his own age groups as well, and you know, people are kicking him all the time, and he just gets up and gets on with it. You know, he's a great kid, and one I really, really look forward to watching when he's playing, and I look forward to working with him when he comes to training, because he always wants to learn.
Looking at some of the pictures from last night, Gary, it looks like quite a young side that was out there, even in the opposition. So, but were there any grizzled old veterans in their 30s playing in the match?
Yeah, there was. Yeah. There was a mixture of experienced and young players and that. So there was, and you know, obviously in our own team, we had a couple of ex-internationals and stuff, and boys that have played across the water. So, you know, they were there to look out for him as well and look after him. And, you know, to see him in training, he trains with the first team and that, and the first team players look out for him. And as I say, he's, you know, I wouldn't do it with any kid, you know, but you have to make sure first and foremost that he has awareness, you know, to get into areas you don't want him in positions where he's going to get kicked or anything like that. And we also obviously managed the game as well in terms of what game we were going to introduce him in. And obviously last night was a good platform for us to put him out there, because obviously we were a few goals out of the good. And, you know, the other team was tiring towards the end of the game as well, which means that, you know, he wasn't probably going to get into as much physical battles. And, you know, as I said, he come on and, you know, he touched the ball 11, 12 times, didn't give the ball away once in the whole time he was on. He assisted a goal, and he probably should have scored a goal. He connected with a shot with his left foot, and he probably connected it with it too well. If he had scuffed it, it would have went into the net.
You'll be hoping to keep him for as long as possible, I'm sure, but have the scouts been sort of sniffing around a bit?
They will be now. You'll have Pep seeing at the next game, won't you?
Yeah, well, there's been lots of interest, as I say, from he's been a young age, from he's been 8, but obviously with the rules and everything else in England, I think it's 14 now that they can't go over or sign or whatever till that age. So, you know, obviously that's prevented him from getting over a lot. So, but there's definitely been lots of people over here continually keeping an eye on him, and you know, and that's been from his 8 years of age.
Fantastic, and it's not gone to his head. You say he's a good lad. He's not getting carried away with all this publicity.
That's the one reason why I think he has a great chance, because he's from a humble family. His father, believe it or not, was a YTS at Hearts and didn't make it, you know, and got released at 18. So he knows the how tough it is to become a professional footballer, and that's the one thing that his dad instills in him, and the family instills in him. And you know, if you meet him, he's the quietest kid in the world, but you know, he has this confidence when he goes onto the football field. He isn't arrogant. He's just got a confidence in his ability, and. But off the pitch, he doesn't say boo to a ghost. He's very, very, very quiet. And, you know, as I said, he's a humble kid who works very, very hard at everything he does, even at school, you know, at football. He plays Gaelic football as well. You know, he's just dedicated to everything he does.
Fantastic. Well, good to talk to you, Gary. Pass on our best to Christopher. It's a great achievement. And thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Gary Hammond there, the Glenarvan manager. And well done to Christopher.
One to watch, I think.
13 years, 329 days, a British record, the world record, Andy. Happened in Liberia in the 4th Division. I know you follow the Liberian 4th Division. So I feel it wrong to even tell you. It was in the Guru Haifa FC match when they brought an 11-year-old Eric Godpower Marshall.
I remember him.
Yeah,
tremendous.
I know you're a big fan. You thought we'd train on. And let's hope he has. 11 years old. So, but a British record set last night in Northern Ireland in the League Cup.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
You may be aware that the Professional Footballers Association own the Ellis Lowry painting Going to the Match. They bought it for £1.9 million a few years. What, about 19, was it late 90s? I should check the date, really. Anyway, we'll find out.
They got a lot of criticism, didn't they, over
it
the
did.
Years?
It did. People used to suggest that, it was wrong that they should have a piece of work like this. It would sit in Gordon Taylor's office. But it was a canny investment, clearly, because it looks like it's going under the hammer next month and could fetch £8 million. Now, Lowry, this is his most famous football painting, but there was a number of them here. Tell us more about that. From my art broker, the managing director, Charlotte Stewart. Good afternoon, Charlotte.
Hi there. Hi, guys.
So this, I mean, on the face of it, this was a canny investment by the PFA. I mean, at the time, £1.9 million, was that a good price or did they sort of pay over the odds?
I mean, it's all about market value at the time. I think, as you say, it was a very, very canny investment. I mean, what makes it so special is it's absolutely quintessential Lowry. And it's about emotion and the anticipation and the crowd witnessing something together. It just makes it a really special work. And, you know, only time will tell if it really, really was a quite an extraordinary investment.
I love the feeling of movement of the crowd and the anticipation of the match. You know, that excitement, he really captures that, I think.
He really does. I mean, and I think this is why this painting of all of them, I mean, there's sort of three reasons why this painting is quite so special. And firstly, because exactly as you say, it typifies exactly what Lowry does in these works, where he brings emotion and crowds. Those are the two things that he's most obsessed with, is emotion and crowds. And if you put those two things together, you basically get football, don't you? You get that total sense of something being a communal emotion. Secondly, I think, you know, Lowry was a huge football fan himself, namely a Manchester City fan, but he was a frequent visitor to the Bolton Wanderers Football Club. And also, you know, that was the site of the Burden Park disaster in 1946.
Yeah, he was a City fan, wasn't he, though, Lowry? Although he went to Burden Park, he was a Manchester City fan, apparently.
He was indeed. The Burden Park disaster, I think, you know, an extra piece of this story with the painting. So obviously it happened in 1946 and it's a change the crowd control rules afterwards. So, you know, the site itself has that emotional, poignant meaning as well.
It was 1999 that the PFA bought it. And at the time it was a record paid for a Lowry painting. So, I mean, I don't know if it was bought because it felt it was the right thing to do because it was the PFA, or they did see it as something that would be a huge investment, because £6 million going into the union is a huge amount of money potentially.
Absolutely. I mean, the most, it's not, if it sells for £8 million, it will certainly break a record. But it's not quite there yet. I mean, you know, the sort of joint first with Lowry's most expensive painting ever sold was another football match work, the football match in name, which sold for £5.6 million in 2011. And then it joint placed with the painting called Piccadilly Circus, which did sell for £5.6 million, but unfortunately sold in 2014 for £5.1 million. So you win some, you lose some at auction.
Is that hot? That's strange, isn't it? Why is that? If the artist's work is collectible, it seems odd that it would go down in price. As you say, is it just market value at the time?
It's market value. And I think, you know, auction is a strange beast. you have to work with demand at the time, and ultimately it's always down to whether you've got two bidders in the room or on the phones or online at that, you know, at the right time. And this is, you know, this is the challenge for auction, really. We run a private sales platform so that that can't happen, because I think that's, you know, that's the biggest issue that the auctions face. And in one sense, it's this wonderful kind of gladiatorial forum of bidding, but really no one really knows what's going to happen on the night.
It's quite a prize piece, though, I'd imagine. Very rich people. It could who be. Love I mean, football. Yeah. It's a rarity.
Could be one of those that goes for more than eight, Charlotte. You often see that in the moment because it is such a coveted sort of football
painting. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you look at the Banksy market, which is you know, very, very different from Lowry, but Game Changer, which is a work that Banksy made during the COVID pandemic. No one expected that to hit the height it did. You just never know what's going to happen. It has to be. I think with Lowry's works, especially at the moment, you know, they're all about you know, the hard graft of industrial life and that moment when everybody just, like, you know, shuts off after 5.5 days solid working and heads to the stadium. And that's something that I think, you know, in this day and age, there's this sense of kind of communal emotions and letting go, which I think we can all empathise with.
Does the current financial market affect what happens in the auction room? I mean, or the people spending $8 million on a painting not really affected by the cost of living crisis, I guess?
No, not.
So I think it's a good question. I should think the core market is definitely affected. But, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of fantastic deals to be had in a difficult market. So you get a lot of activity for certain works. And, you know, as you say, people that are willing and able to spend $8 million, you know, are probably less affected.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of the TV show Fake or Fortune. And just wonder, is Lowry much faked? I would imagine that he is in a certain sense.
Any market that has significant investment value is heavily faked. I think, you know, there's specific markets that you have to be really, really careful in. The Banksy market is an area that you have to be careful in, but luckily they have something called pest control authentication, which allows for buyers and sellers to be absolutely sure of what they've got. Warhol is another area that's really on the up, and there's a lot of fakes that come out of certain parts of the world where they're very, very good at it. So yeah, any market, there's lots and lots of fakes, and people are incredibly good at it.
I see that Going to the Match won a prize in 1953, a football and fine art competition, and Lowry won the princely sum of £250. Was he one of those artists that didn't make a great deal of money from his work in his lifetime? He died in 1976, or was he rewarded for what he did?
I mean, nothing like he wasn't uncelebrated like some of the greats were, but, you know, nothing like the sort of value that we're looking at now. I think, you know, these paintings would have been sold for around £250. So, yes, it's definitely a markup on that. But no, he did have notoriety during his lifetime.
Well, look, good to talk to you, Charlotte. Thanks very much for that. And we'll keep an eye on the auction and see what it sells for. Maybe we'll talk again. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Managing Director at My Art Broker there, Charlotte Stewart, on Going to the Match.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. I won't be here actually until Tuesday now, but Andy, you'll be back on Friday with Charlie.
I will.
And Charlie will be here tomorrow with Perry Groves. So we do hope you can join the guys tomorrow from 1, when, of course, there is an England squad announcement. So thanks very much for your company.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.